Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, Alice Bryant, and Bruce Alpert. Later, Ana Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Travelers to the United States from 8 countries face new restrictions under a document that President Donald Trump signed on Sunday. The new restrictions are to take effect on October 18th. They will affect citizens from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, Chad, North Korea, and Venezuela. The Trump administration described the new measures in a statement on Sunday. It said, "These countries have refused to share information about terrorism and other issues with the United States." The new measures do not apply to Sudan. Iraq also does not face entry restrictions, although travelers may face greater screening security. Those two countries had been included in earlier versions of Trump's travel bans. Chad, North Korea, and Venezuela are new additions to the travel ban. The presidential proclamation states that North Korea does not cooperate with the United States government in any respect and fails to satisfy all information-sharing requirements. Venezuela was included for failing to cooperate in showing if travelers present national security or public safety threats. U.S. officials also said Venezuela does not willingly receive Venezuelans deported from the U.S. The Trump administration called Chad a valuable and important partner in fighting terrorism, but it noted that the country had not shared terrorism-related or other public safety information. The statement says the restrictions are conditional and that the countries can take actions to ease the measures. Human rights groups largely disapproved of the new ban. The Council on American-Islamic Relations is a Muslim civil rights group based in Washington, D.C. In a statement, the group denounced the policy, saying it was, in the group's words, part of the administration's ugly white supremacist agenda. The London-based rights group Amnesty International also criticized the new restrictions. It said families had been torn apart since the last travel ban. It also said the ban unfairly targeted whole nations of people because of the crimes of a few. The group said the action did not keep anyone safe. In the proclamation, the president said, "The restrictions announced are tough and tailored, and they send a message to foreign governments that they must work with us to enhance security." Trump released an executive order in March that placed travel restrictions on 6 Muslim-majority countries. However, that order was immediately disputed and suspended in U.S. courts. Critics said the ban unfairly targeted Muslims. In June, the U.S. Supreme Court permitted parts of the order to go into effect. The earlier order placed entry restrictions on citizens of Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Citizens of those countries were required to have a credible claim of a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States. Two of the three new countries placed on the travel ban list, North Korea and Venezuela, are not Muslim majority. Chad is estimated to be majority Muslim, however, it has large populations of other religious groups as well. I'm Mario Ritter.
More than 100 young women have returned to school for the first time in 3 years. The young women were schoolgirls in the Nigerian town of Chibok when they were kidnapped in 2014. Their kidnappers were supporters of the militant group Boko Haram. Some, but not all, of the Chibok girls were later released or escaped. Now, more than 100 of them are starting a new life after months of rest and recovery under the care of the Nigerian government. The girls had expected to start taking classes at the American University of Nigeria in the city of Yola early next month. But the head of the Chibok Parents Association, Yakubu Nkeki, said the start date was moved up because the school year had already begun. "I went with them to the school until they were handed over to the school authority," Nkeki told VOA. "Since the school has already started, it was decided that it is best for them to go straight to school so they don't miss too many classes. They were already starting late." To celebrate, the government threw the young woman a send-off party earlier this month in the capital, Abuja. At the party, the Minister for Women's Affairs and Social Development, Aisha Jumai Al-Hassan, said the girls will start remedial classes at the university. She said this would help prepare them for undergraduate classes in any subject of their choice. The federal government is paying for their schooling. The American University of Nigeria already has 24 young women who escaped from Boko Haram fighters. They fled shortly after the militants kidnapped more than 250 students from a secondary school in Chibok in April 2014. The kidnappings fueled a worldwide Bring Back Our Girls movement. The campaign had many supporters in the United States, including Michelle Obama, wife of former President Barack Obama. The girls who entered the university this week spent 30 to 37 months in captivity before the militants released them in two groups after negotiations with the government. American politician Frederica Wilson was a supporter of the Bring Back Our Girls movement. Wilson is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. She met the young woman in Abuja before they left the city and told VOA the former captives seemed to be in good shape. Wilson added that according to their caretakers, the Chibok girls had a long period of medical and psychological treatment.
Can you imagine being held captive with terrorists, men who frighten you every single day for 3 years? When you are released, you are not normal. Your psychic is not too good. So they had to debrief them and help them.
Wilson said she was told that some girls are recovering from bullet wounds, machete wounds, and snake bites.
Because these girls had been together so long, to separate them would have traumatized them, in my estimation. I think the decision they made to keep them together was the best thing they could have done.
More than 100 girls from Chibok are still in Boko Haram captivity, 3.5 years after they were kidnapped. At the send-off party, Women's Affairs Minister Al-Hassan said she is hopeful the rest of the girls will be freed. I assure you that by the grace of God, we will have our remaining girls released, she said. I'm Phil Dierking.
American colleges are deciding whether to change how they investigate sexual assaults after a directive from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Last Friday, DeVos withdrew official guidance on how college and university officials deal with sexual assault cases. Those rules were established during the presidency of Barack Obama. DeVos became Education Secretary after Republican Donald Trump replaced Obama as president. She said the Obama rules used the lowest standard of evidence and sometimes denied a fair hearing to students accused of sexual attacks, including rape. The Obama administration had called on colleges to use a standard that held a preponderance or majority of evidence was enough to decide guilt. Obama's education secretary, Arne Duncan, had said the guidelines were needed because some colleges were not taking sexual assaults and dating violence seriously enough. DeVos will let colleges choose between the preponderance standard and another measure, clear and convincing evidence. That second standard is harder to meet.
Legal experts say a change in evidence requirements can be important because often no one saw the sexual assault other than the victim and person accused of the attack. Stephen Schulhofer is an expert on criminal justice issues and a professor at New York University's School of Law. Schulhofer said that if both the victim and accused make statements, a preponderance standard requires only a determination which version is more likely to be true. In contrast, he said, a clear and convincing standard is much harder to meet, requires real confidence that one version is true, the other not true. Stephanie Spangler directs the Office of Health Affairs and Academic Integrity at Yale University in Connecticut. She said, We remain committed to policies that effectively address sexual misconduct and processes that are fair to all. Spangler said she believes that Yale's current policies meet new requirements announced by DeVos and Connecticut state laws.
Janet Napolitano is president of the University of California system. She formerly served as Homeland Security Secretary in the Obama administration. Napolitano said she is deeply worried the new rules will, in effect, weaken sexual violence protections. DeVos said that the Education Department is not backing away from strong actions to stop sexual assault. Schools must continue to confront these horrific crimes and behaviors head on, DeVos said. In her announcement last week, she also removed an Obama administration rule that called on colleges to decide sexual assault cases within 60 days. Some critics had said that 60 days was not enough time for colleges to collect evidence. But others said a 60-day time period was needed so assault victims are not put under more pressure by the accused and their friends to drop charges. Elizabeth Boyle works with Know Your Nine, a group that helps survivors of sexual assault. She fears the new guidelines will make even more victims of sexual assault unwilling to report the crimes. As it is, she said, many victims of sexual assault are afraid to report being attacked for fear that their charges will not be taken seriously. These changes will only make things worse, she added. Boyle is a student at Notre Dame University in Indiana.
But the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education said that the Obama administration guidelines made it difficult for people falsely accused of sexual assault to get a fair hearing. It made it impossible for campuses to serve the needs of victims while also respecting the rights of the accused, said Robert Shibley, the group's director. Now, he said, the U.S. finally has the chance to get it right. DeVos said the Education Department will spend the next few months developing new rules on sexual assault through a public process. She said the department will not allow sexual assault to be swept under the rug. By swept under the rug, she meant hiding something to avoid looking bad. In a series of questions and answers sent to college officials, the Education Department said it is looking for fair treatment of both sexual assault victims and people accused of such attacks. Any process made available to one party should be made equally available to the other party, the department said in one answer. It noted that both the victim of sexual assault and the person accused should be able to bring the advisor of their choice to hearings. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
The Vietnamese Ministry of Public Security recently began investigating three companies under the state-owned gas and oil group PetroVietnam. The companies may have tried to divert more than $5 million from a Vietnamese financial institution called Ocean Bank. The case has brought attention to Vietnam's continued problems with corruption as the country experiences economic growth. Frederick Burke is a lawyer with the firm Baker McKenzie in Ho Chi Minh City. He said, "In terms of corruption in Vietnam, I do think it's a serious problem here, and I think the government recognizes that." Experts say corruption could affect the country's continued economic growth. Vietnam's economy grew at least 5% each year between 2012 and 2016. Export manufacturing has been a main driver of the growth. The nonprofit group Transparency International placed Vietnam at 113th out of 176 countries and areas that it studied in 2016 for perceptions of corruption. Most countries in the Asia-Pacific area placed in the lower half of the index. The New York-based group GAN Integrity calls corruption pervasive or everywhere in Vietnam. It says companies are likely to face bribery, political interference, and facilitation payments in many industries, especially in the fields of land development and construction. Low salaries for government workers are one of the causes of corruption, said Trung Nguyen. He is the International Relations Dean at Ho Chi Minh University of Social Sciences and Humanities. Complex rules have also led companies to seek permitting shortcuts, another source of corruption, Nguyen said. People with money or property sometimes hold back expansion to avoid getting involved in graft, a dishonest activity in which people in power use their position to get money and advantages. Nguyen said Vietnamese may face graft when they ask government offices for documents or when police stop them in traffic. Such actions reduce citizens' trust in government services. "I think it's very bad," Nguyen said. "I have so many friends, and they don't want to open big businesses in Vietnam, because they think that they will have to deal with the government, and they have to bribe them, and it violates their ethics and their principles." The PetroVietnam case is part of a bigger issue at Ocean Bank, according to VN Express. The English language news website says more than 50,000 people and 400 organizations benefited from what lawyers call illegal interest payments totaling more than $70 million. From 2010 to 2014, bank officials offered loans and set deposit rates above state-approved limits to some important customers, local media have reported. This included PetroVietnam. VN Express calls the case one of the biggest bank fraud problems ever brought to court in Vietnam. The government has tried to reduce corruption. In October 2016, the government gave an unusually honest report to the legislature, saying several officials had been neglecting their duties and failing to uphold moral standards and political virtues, VN Express reported. But Transparency International says it sees little public information about the results of anti-corruption efforts. Nguyen says he does not feel that Vietnam's top leaders are, in his words, united in stopping the problem. I don't think they have political will to end corruption.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The World Health Organization says progress is being made in reducing deaths from non-communicable diseases. But it says much more needs to be done to save the almost 40 million people who die every year from preventable causes. In a new report, the WHO noted that cardiovascular and chronic respiratory diseases, cancers, and diabetes are the biggest killers of people. Every year, the report said, 15 million adults die before they reach old age. It noted they often die in the most productive period of their lives, between the ages of 30 and 70. The agency says tobacco use, the harmful use of alcohol, unhealthy diets, and lack of physical activity are some of the top reasons for premature death. Douglas Betcher is the WHO Director for the Prevention of Non-Communicable Diseases. He says little progress is being made on cutting premature death from such diseases by one-third by the year 2030. That is a sustainable development goal for United Nations member countries.
The window of opportunity to save lives is closing. This is playing out before our eyes in many ways, including increasing numbers of people, particularly children and adolescents suffering from obesity, overweight, and diabetes. If we don't take action now to protect people from NCDs, we will condemn today's and tomorrow's youth to lives of ill health and reduced economic opportunities.
Betcher says premature deaths from non-communicable diseases are not just a problem for rich countries.
80% of the deaths are in countries that are already often stressed. Their health systems are stressed with the usual conventional burdens of disease, communicable diseases, maternal child health problems, and then this is an added extremely large burden for the health system.
The WHO report says Costa Rica and Iran are at the top of a list of 10 countries that have been most successful at reducing deaths from non-communicable diseases. It says six countries have failed to make any progress against such deaths. Five of the six are in Africa. They are Angola, Equatorial Guinea, Guinea-Bissau, Sao Tome and Principe, and South Sudan. The sixth country is Micronesia in the Western Pacific. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.